So I'm going to just quickly go through a whole bunch of different questions that we've got. Jean-Charles, ficatumumab.
I think it's a very sad story. I think there is room to improve this through biomarkers. I mean, there is some clear hints that eventually free IGF-1 levels are part of the solution to tease out those who will get excess of toxicity towards those who will get more of efficacy.
Another question on maintenance. Chandra, what maintenance do you give for squamous?
So for squamous cell carcinoma, at the present point in time, we are not giving maintenance therapy. So we would, if there is an occasional patient that you would think has EGFR mutation positive disease, I would give them erlotinib. But I have not yet seen a squamous cell patient respond to erlotinib. Maybe I'm out of line. Maybe I should ask the panel members, have they seen a response in a squamous patient with erlotinib?
Vince, squamous and erlotinib?
I would say probably yes, but my suspicion is they had an adenocarcinoma and it was just 5 cells in a slide, something like that.
So, Mark, without going into what you're going to present here at the meeting, but any global thoughts about nab-paclitaxel?
Yeah, I think the technology of binding drugs to albumin makes a lot of sense. I think we're learning more about tumor biology and the role of the GP60 caveolin-1 transcytosis mechanism, the role of SPARC in tumors and those sorts of things. And it may actually be a more biologically potent formulation of a drug that we all accept as being active in this disease. And I will be presenting some data on Monday about this. We just published a paper in the Journal of Thoracic Oncology looking at carbo-nab-paclitaxel that looks, quote-unquote, encouraging for phase 2 data. So I think we'll have to let the data bear out and see where it fits in.
I was talking to Mark this afternoon. He used a great expression that, what did you say, tumors or albumin sponges?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You like that?
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, Tom, why is there no survival benefit with EGFR mutants in IPASS?
I think that a lot of the patients are getting gefitinib second line, and if you are aggressively giving gefitinib first or second line, as I mentioned, I think you're going to see survival is going to be harder to show a survival difference in that setting. And I think you'd need a very large study to show, a much larger study than that to show a survival benefit.
Vince?
I just wanted to amplify that. If you look at a study where you're obliged to include crossover, such as that type of study, the survival would favor the group getting chemo first because they'd be more likely to be able to get the TKI as second line than the converse, where it'd be more difficult and you'd be more disinclined to have patients able to take cytotoxic therapy in second line. And the second point is that if you have a patient with an EGFR mutation, the vast majority of their life and their benefit from treatment is going to be with the EGFR TKI. So these relatively minor things that aren't really attacking their cancer terribly well in many cases are not going to be able to influence survival. I mean, a perfect example is looking at the Asian subset in FLEX, which I put on the chat room. It wasn't that cetuximab was detrimental to the group. It was that group did not go on to get gefitinib or erlotinib because individuals somehow assumed that cetuximab and these TKIs were similar. And that explains why the latter group that was on the control did so relatively well with a 21-month median survival.
So anybody on the panel, there was interest in fulvestrant being added to erlotinib?
Yeah, we added fulvestrant to erlotinib because based on the data that tamoxifen, which primarily is a partial blocker of estrogen, fulvestrant actually blocks both the type 1 and type 2. So that's why we did total estrogen blockade in lung cancer, because it's not the same type of estrogen as you see in breast cancer. So we had a trial where we compared erlotinib to erlotinib and fulvestrant based on Jill Siegfried's data from University of Pittsburgh. And that trial has still not been completed as of yet, but it is ongoing as a phase 2 randomized study.
Interesting. I think I remember George Sledge was talking about a paper in San Antonio where they found, I think, fewer lung cancers and people who had breast cancer got anti-estrogens.
Fewer lung cancers get anti-estrogens, but I think that anti-estrogens may be one of the treatments. So for total estrogen blockade, you either need Arimidex or fulvestrant.
Amazing. So Tom, instead of biopsying a patient with lung cancer a second time, what about circulating tumor cells? Of course, you guys had that great paper in the New England Journal looking at that. Where are we with that right now?
So the commercially accepted technology, the J&J technology, is fine for some diseases, probably not sensitive enough for most patients with lung cancer. There is a Stand Up to Cancer grant involving Mass General and Memorial Sloan Kettering and MIT and MD Anderson, trying to see if the MGH technology for looking for circulating tumor cells turns out to be exportable and something that people can do. Bottom line is, right now, we don't have great technology for CTCs, but I think this is evolving rapidly, and there are several private companies that have some interesting leads. I suspect this is something we'll have available in a couple of years.
Jean-Charles, does anyone use PathWorks Diagnostic or Target now? Van Hoff gene expression analysis in patients with lung cancer.
I'm not doing that at this standpoint.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for audio highlights of an ASCO Satellite Symposium on Management of Non-Small Cell Lung Cancer.